Welcome back to Brains and Guts, the GI Innovation Podcast from the American College of Gastroenterology. I'm Vladimir Kushner, Chair of the ACG Innovation and Technology Committee. This year, we'll bring you a new season of conversations about artificial intelligence in gastroenterology. We'll talk about the impact on clinical practices, education, patient outcomes, and more. Today, we're excited to welcome Dr. Asma Shaket to the podcast. Dr. Shaket is a professor of medicine at NYU Grossman School of Medicine. She is also the director of outcomes research for the Division of Gastroenterology and Hepatology. Dr. Shaket's research focuses on colorectal cancer prevention, quality indicators in colonoscopy, and artificial intelligence tools in and the use of AI tools to improve outcomes in gastroenterology. She is a member of the ACG Board of Trustees and a thought leader on the effective and ethical use of artificial intelligence in GI practice. In other words, she's the perfect guest to kick off this new season. We hope you enjoy.
So again, thank you very much for joining us, Asma. And I wanted to start by asking you first if you could provide an overview of how artificial intelligence is currently being integrated into gastroenterology and healthcare more broadly. I know you have a lot of experience in this area and you have a leadership role in the American College, and our audience would benefit from you giving us an overview.
Thank you so much for having me. AI is obviously very, very prevalent in healthcare, and it's shaping healthcare, hopefully in ways that help us take care of patients better and do our jobs more efficiently and effectively. Speaking of gastroenterology, I'm very excited about some of the developments or enhancements AI can provide to us for our healthcare. And, they range from things we do in the clinic when we're seeing the patient, as well as things we do in the endoscopy unit, plus the ability to have more precision medicine, to tailor therapies to our patients, so that instead of using the one-size-fits-all approach, we can have a more customized approach. I think those are all really, really important and exciting developments.
Thank you. So from your leadership perspective, from the stuff that you mentioned, what do you think is the most promising application of AI in gastroenterology that you foresee having a significant impact on the field in the coming few years?
So at the moment where AI is in gastroenterology, Tufik, as you know, that we have computer-aided detection of polyps. So in endoscopy, I would say AI is currently, we're all using it in our endoscopy suites. So that's where it's currently the most advanced in its use. And that's helping us improve the quality of our everyday endoscopic procedures. As you know, bulk of our work is doing endoscopic procedures, particularly colonoscopy, to be able to detect and remove polyps. So to be effective at our job, AI is helping us be better at detecting these lesions and hopefully in the future understand their histology, their size, and resection technique, which we think long-term will impact reduction in colorectal cancer incidence and mortality and make us more effective at what we do. But I think one of the most exciting applications, which is currently under development, and we'll see more on it in the next 2 to 3 years, is the ability of precision medicine applied in gastroenterology, where AI models can help us understand, put together a patient's risk factors, other factors in the chart, and understand their risk of a disease. Tufik, you do a lot of, pancreas-related work. And as there's many cancers that we just don't know who's at risk for developing and how aggressive we should be in terms of following them or performing surveillance with imaging. So similar things apply to colon cancer, which I study pretty closely. So having a customized risk score, which looks at patient factors, as well as things in the electronic health record, plus patterns that perhaps are not visible to the human eye, but could be put together to tell us if somebody is at increased risk and should they undergo imaging or a procedure sooner than other individuals, or could we reassure certain patients that they're not at risk and perhaps, you know, improve their healthcare by offering them a more tailor-made approach. So I think that's a very exciting application.
Thank you for that. So if I understood it correctly, basically aggregating large data to make a more personalized approach to care, especially when it comes to cancer prevention and cancer treatment. Did I understand it correctly?
Yeah, absolutely. So these, you know, multimodal large language models that take into account not just, you know, the patient's clinical demographic information, but also harness imaging as well as pathology information, and really are able to precisely tell us who's at increased risk that needs perhaps screening or continued surveillance.
Sounds very, very exciting.
Yeah.
I wanted to get your thoughts on the administrative tasks that AI can help us with. Do you see that a big part of the future? And, you know, we hear often that AI is going to help physicians become more human. What are your thoughts on that?
I absolutely agree. So as you know, in the college, we're always very, very focused on our members, and, you know, their well-being, their efficiency, and their needs are the college's top priority. And over the last 5 or 10 years, there's just been increased amounts of workload put on our physicians and providers, which is leading to a lot of burnout, dissatisfaction. So in that domain, we're really excited at the role of AI in helping our members do their job more efficiently. And what some of the applications of that are, you know, number one, members can benefit from AI scribes. And, you know, these are ambient AI or listening devices that can essentially listen in on a patient encounter and perhaps put together a very comprehensive and cohesive summary of everything that was discussed. And that would save us a lot of time and energy trying to recall exactly what was said and then having to dictate the note at the end. As you know, many of us kind of dictate notes at the end of clinic. So instead of that burden, having a note that we could just edit and make sure it's accurate would be, you know, definitely a welcome change. Also, AI tools that can perhaps answer some of the most common questions that crowd our inboxes. You know, we all struggle with these overflowing inboxes. Turns out a lot of those messages are along very similar themes. And perhaps, you know, having AI help us answer them and get smarter at understanding what answers we would like it to suggest and using those in the future would really help. You know, I prescribe a patient a proton pump inhibitor, and then I'll get an inbox message about, hey, I forgot how you told me to take it. So there's no reason why AI can't, you know, produce that answer and for me to just kind of look at it and approve it instead of having to type it many times over. So in that regard, it can also help make my work more efficient and then save me time to do things that I, you know, really want to get to, which is direct patient care. And finally, helping us get better reimbursement. So there are several AI algorithms that show us that AI-trained programs can capture CPT and ICD codes much better and help us code and bill at the appropriate level. Because obviously, as you know, both overbilling and underbilling are issues. And a lot of practices have this burden where they're spending time and resources trying to code and bill accurately. So if AI can help us with that and perhaps maximize our billing, I think that would be a welcome addition, especially in this environment of declining reimbursements.
This is very exciting. You mentioned, you know, the college is focused on artificial intelligence. Now, could you share with us some of the ways the college is contributing or supporting the development and integration of AI technologies in the field of gastroenterology?
Yes, so the college is extremely committed to helping its members kind of understand and harness the benefits and efficiencies that AI can produce in their practices. The college is going to be putting out several blueprint documents as well as guidance statements on kind of efficient and effective use of AI in their practice today. And we recently had an AI in GI workshop that the college spearheaded and organized with many of the thought leaders across the college and many other experts invited, where, you know, the charge given to this group was to come up with some of the applications of AI that are relevant and available to our members now and things that they could look forward to in the near future. So I think that's going to be a very exciting document. In addition, the college is always looking to assess these technologies as they come out and provide appropriate and very practical guidance to its membership about how they could consider using it and you know, what are some of the pros and cons of the approach so that members can make some informed decisions. So we'll be making sure that you know, we stay abreast of some of these developments and give our members kind of the upshot of how it could help their practice.
So Asma, following up on that last question, where does ACG stand as far as educating members about the role of AI in clinical practice, decision-making, as well as how AI impacts the world they live in general? So you mentioned billing and reimbursement. Prior authorization is also something that's come up in discussions of artificial intelligence. So what is the ACG doing to help educate physicians in practice, as well as what's your view on how fellows and other physicians in training should be informed about artificial intelligence and where it should fit into the GI training curriculum?
Yeah, all really important questions. So again, the college is really committed to making their members, you know, everyday practice more efficient and more effective. And in that regard, as these AI tools come forth, the college will continue to take a proactive role in arranging, if it needs to be, workshops and putting out, you know, white papers or documents that help guide members about how to best use them in their practice. There are also some webinars and some other in-person conferences planned at their annual meeting and regional courses. The college will bring a lot of this information to members so that they can understand, you know, what practical solutions they can use. The direction the college wants to take are in areas of reimbursement, obviously reducing the burden of prior authorization, reducing kind of the inbox clutter, and making endoscopy more efficient and effective. So, you know, I mentioned computer-aided detection of polyps. That's only the start, but also automated reporting of the procedure so that instead of, again, writing a long procedure note, a lot of the note is either populated based on what AI is seeing on the screen or perhaps picking up in the room. And it requires the physician or very little time to spend in finalizing the report. And finally, as some of these tools become effective for personalized medicine, the college will obviously carefully review them and perhaps in the form of guidance statements or other guidelines will provide members the benefits of using these and which ones are ready for primetime use in clinical practice. Such as, you know, tailor-making surveillance intervals or assessing when a patient needs to be initiated on colonoscopy screening. So those are some of the ways that I think the college is helping its members. It's also really open to member suggestions. So we really listen to our members. And if there are other needs as they come forth, we have a whole infrastructure where information, you know, can be transmitted through local governors, regional representatives, as well as college leadership. So we're open to addressing new challenges. And then, as you mentioned, an important direction is training and education. The college obviously supports and invests very heavily in training the next generation of gastroenterologists and the workforce. And we, again, want the workforce to have the tools so that they can start their practices, you know, very efficiently, have the right training, and perhaps have longevity in their careers and satisfaction with what they do. So in that regard, as you know, a lot of the training tools are kind of being developed and deployed for trainees. Many of them are understanding how to train our trainees for these AI tools, so they can start using them now instead of having this learning curve later in practice. And Vlad, you and I have spoken about this. Should trainees have AI tools integrated right from the start of their clinical training so that they're proficient at them, but also it accelerates their learning curve for what we're trying to teach them, whether it's endoscopy or a complex differential diagnosis. But then also, you know, being able to assess patients and come up with the same quality of care even without these AI tools. So I think both those things are important. And over time, many skills will become obsolete. So I don't think we need to necessarily, teach trainees things that we'll never use again. But I think with and without AI, we're learning to teach our trainees how to be effective in both those settings so that, you know, they're proficient in whatever healthcare setting that they end up practicing in. And, you know, you work with a lot of trainees, so I was curious if either of you had thoughts on other ways trainees can harness the power of AI.
I think it's a very interesting question. You know, certainly I would say trainees have taught me how to use AI when on the wards more than I've taught them because they are much more familiar with the digital tools that are available. Gone are the days of going to up to date when you need to look something up. There are much more efficient pathways to look up information with the aid of artificial intelligence. One concern that I think a lot of practicing physicians have is, are trainees going to become over-reliant on AI? And I think that's a very interesting topic to delve into, because there are obviously pluses and minuses. We're no longer using standard definition endoscopy. Nobody would say that we need to go back to using standard definition scopes so that trainees can learn high definition endoscopy, because that's how we did it, 20, 25 years ago. But at the same time, how does the impact of the human-machine interaction on the way we acquire information and we process information and integrate it into patient care, I think is something that there are a lot more questions about than answers at this time. And it's going to be a topic of very intense research in the next coming decade.
Yeah, absolutely. So, our medical school's already started to update its curriculum, even at the medical student level. And there's a whole focus on AI. So far it's been working to their advantage. So for instance, they get, AI simulated case summaries. So instead of just learning on, real patient summaries, AI programs are able to give them a very realistic scenario of a patient presentation. And it allows them to kind of start using their complex thinking tools and coming up with a differential and management plan. So I think those kinds of simulation-based exercises are really valuable. And then in a lot of the fellowships, AI-based simulation training really helps the trainees get their skill up before they actually start, using real scopes or trying procedures on real patients. I think those tend to enhance their current training program.
I personally love the question, Vlad, that you brought up about, quality of training and the impact of AI on our capabilities. I don't see many people, you know, asking, hey, our ability to retain phone numbers has been a challenge with smartphones. There's the only number I can remember is the one I knew 20 years ago, you know, but no one is ditching smartphones because we can't remember, or no one is ditching the car because our ability to run is worse now with cars. I think adoption of technology is inevitable, like figuring out how to make the best out of it, you know, with the training environment, in my mind, is the way to go. I'd love to hear your thought, Aslan, on this.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. I mean, things that are obsolete that we don't use anymore, there's no point in, you know, trying to continue to hold on to them. But at the same time, you know, our trainees need to be ready for all kinds of healthcare settings. So I think what we're discussing is having to just kind of understanding the enhancement AI provides, say in endoscopy, right? And being as proficient without AI as with AI, and understanding where AI helps them. And turns out a lot of our technology is geared that way. Because, you know, as you know, in endoscopy, we're still supposed to do the best job we can, and AI is kind of an overlay. So just not relying so much on AI that we can't work without it. And, you know, so far, I think our trainees kind of understand that balance and that added value, and are able to roll with it. But I do think they'll be trained with AI tools and hopefully be much more efficient and proficient than we ever were starting off.
I think you brought up an excellent question that always comes to mind when we're talking about artificial intelligence today. And when you say something like in all settings, brings up the ethical considerations for artificial intelligence today, and especially in lower resource communities. What ethical consideration would you or the college identify as critical when implementing AI solutions in healthcare settings today?
Yeah, I mean, we all worry about the health equity portion of this because, you know, as these tools start coming into clinical practice, you know, there is a price tag attached to them. So what we don't want is for patients with the most access or geographic areas with the highest resources, or healthcare systems with the most resources, kind of being the only places where these are available, and these tools for not being available to perhaps populations and patients that need it the most in lower resource settings or rural settings. So that's definitely quite a big concern. And essentially, to alleviate some of these concerns, you know, we're also working very closely with these AI developers and companies. And I think what the college specifically wants to know is how will this, what is their model for health equity, and how will this be made available and accessible to patients regardless of the ability to afford or access. So that's, I think, an ongoing issue. I don't know if either of you have thoughts or examples of how healthcare systems have embraced this challenge.
The challenge of equity in particular with AI?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it is a struggle that I think we're all trying to figure out how to address, especially when we train these large models. They are trained on the available data, and, you know, for example, there's more available data from on the internet from the United States today, and, you know, how does that apply to people in Africa? I don't know that we have the answer. If I understood it correctly, so ACG, part of their mission and key collaborations with partnership is to impress the need for equity in AI development. Is that something that the ACG is?
Absolutely. So as these, you know, products come to market, you know, many of them reach out to college to disseminate information to its members, or sometimes the members initiate some of these questions to ACG to help them answer and come up, you know, with the right information. So in those scenarios, ACG does, the college does interact with a lot of these developers and companies that offer these technologies as they come to market. And one of the things that I think the college asks for is their health equity model and how it would, you know, how it would apply to patients in every resource settings, because the college obviously does not want to endorse any particular technologies that don't have a very sound health equity model.
This is fantastic from the college. So my next question to you is, if industry wants to collaborate with ACG, what is the best mechanism for industry to reach out? And is there someone in particular or a website?
Yeah, absolutely. So the college has a website, and very simply, it's gi.org. And on it, there's different contacts and also different pages where you can kind of browse and peruse some of the work that the college is doing, some of our guidelines. And there's a lot of information for who to contact from the college. Fortunately, the college administration is very, very nimble and quite integrated. So again, sending an email inquiry or leaving a phone message will eventually get to the right person if we know the topic that is being asked. So I really encourage everybody to use that availability. And for physicians that are members of the college, they can sign in on their member page and they can send inquiries. Also, any one of us that are on the board of trustees or even membership in general, there's a list of governors from your area and your geographic region in the country that you can contact. And we actually encourage members to please bring this these kinds of issues up through the governors, through other members, so that, you know, we can essentially provide answers and solutions. And that's why the whole governor structure has been put in, is to collect all the questions from their constituent areas, geographic areas, and bring them up to leadership. So lots of avenues.
Thank you for sharing this.
So switching more to practical considerations, and I wonder if you could kind of put on your NYU leadership hat for this one. What do you need to take into account when choosing a vendor for an AI platform, be it for adenoma detection during colonoscopy or for something like, AI scribe or doing back office or helping you do back office work like scheduling and prior authorization? What goes into account when you're talking to a vendor and kind of trying to decide who to go with?
Yeah, and I'd love to hear, you know, both of your experience also at your institutions, but I'm guessing it'll be pretty similar along very similar lines. So first, there has to be a need, right? Generally, it comes from our physicians in the practice and also the patient needs. So there's a needs assessment, and then, you know, there's an official committee that we bring up some of these needs to. We have to make a justification of why that need exists. We're a high volume practice. We focus on high quality colonoscopy, and we're looking for tools to, say, enhance our polyp detection or adenoma detection rates. And from there, you know, it's a very standardized process where there's a broad search for all the businesses that potentially are in this space. Hopefully they're FDA approved. And, you know, we solicit bids as well as documentation on evidence that, you know, their product is effective and safe. So from that, there's obviously prioritization and essentially whatever meets the criteria. Then there's some in-person demonstrations of the products as well as back and forth discussions. And then other things like integration with our existing electronic health records or other IT issues are brought up and discussed. And then finally, you know, cost and being able to, scalability is considered in making these decisions. And there's a very informed group. So it's not just a one person's decision, but a very informed group that then comes up with the consensus. We often trial things and then get feedback from our physicians as to how they think it is helping or not helping. And then, you know, before any contracts are made. So it's quite a process, but I think it helps us kind of with the vetting process of getting the best product into our system, that if we are going to spend the time and energy and money to invest in, really provides the results that we're hoping for. So I'd be curious to hear experiences that you guys have, since you're also leaders in your healthcare systems.
Yeah, I'll be happy to share mine. You know, it is often, so we do have a process similar to the elaborate process that you have, where there's an evaluation, but it is often started by a champion who, you know, was in a meeting, saw some technology and brings it back, say, hey, have you all considered this? I've seen it a little bit more reversed than if there's a need and we're trying to solve it more as it's been more champion driven, where we have the solution. Can we use the solution to make us more efficient, to improve our quality? And then it goes through a laborious process where, you know, IT has a big say in it. As you said, does it integrate with the current EHR, and is the implementation seamless? And honestly, we've adopted some technologies, and then 6 months later, there were technologies that we liked better. Thinking, hey, should we have waited? So I think the field is changing so rapidly that it's an exciting time and a challenging time at the same time.
Yeah, hey, Brinch.
So did we lose? Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So an important question that comes to mind that I think a leader like you might be able to put their future hat on and tell us, where do you see AI in gastroenterology 5 years from now and 10 years from now? And especially if you can share some of the steps that the college is taking to shape this future.
Yeah, I think in 5 years we'll have, you know, we're right at that explosion point of AI tools making it to clinical practice, which makes it a very, very exciting time. So in 5 years, I think we'll have a lot of AI, whether we realize it or not, integrated into the care of our patients on an everyday basis. Now, some of these products are going to be add-on things that we will notice, such as, you know, computer-aided detection of polyps. And hopefully by then there'll be enhancements where it's not just detecting things that look like polyps, but also being able to give us perhaps a size and histologic diagnosis. And AI scribes will become much, much, much more commonplace. But then there'll be a lot of other tools kind of embedded and working in the background of our everyday practice that we may have to kind of stop and think about, such as automated patient summaries. So when we see a patient, there'll be AI tools that kind of summarize their clinical course leading up to this point, so that I'm not scrolling back through the chart many, many years trying to piece together exactly what happened regarding the problem I'm seeing them for that, you know, led up to this day. So those electronic health record enhancements, I think, will make our practice more efficient. You know, we did talk about AI-enabled patient answers for a lot of the common questions, as well as AI-enabled prep instructions for colonoscopy and some of the tracking of post-colonoscopy outcomes, such as, you know, complications or other need. So I see just integration of a lot of more AI tools into our everyday practice, some obviously very visible and some not so much. The college wants to stay abreast of all these developments and not only understand and vet them for their benefits, their costs, and their risks, but also transmit that information to its members in a very timely and, you know, practical manner so that they can make some decisions that are relevant to their practice and how they take care of patients. Overall, we want our members to work on their well-being, reduce burnout, have longevity, and have more satisfaction with work. And then also in this realm, AI tools for coding and reimbursement, as well as prior authorizations, I think are all the things that the college is excited about and hopes to embrace and offer to its members to make our practices more efficient. So I think the college is committed to staying abreast of this and bringing all these updates to members in the form of either guidance statements or regional and national courses where we discuss some of the state of the art and state of the science regarding these updates.
And just thank you, Asma. And, you know, just kind of to show how AI can really affect our practice in a daily manner, just getting ready for clinic this morning, I actually used a open evidence search to create patient education materials for about an ampullary adenoma to help drive the discussion with a patient in clinic today.
Oh, that's amazing. I hope we have more of these tools available so we can kind of do them, you know, on the fly also. So that's actually very exciting. I have clinic this afternoon, so I might try something similar for my patients. So thanks for sharing.
So on that optimistic note, Asma, I would really like to thank you for taking the time to chat with us this morning and share your wisdom with our listeners and hope to see everyone on future episodes of the podcast. And with that, we will sign off.
Thank you so much for having me. Excited to listen to other speakers on your podcast.
Thank you for listening to Brains and Guts, the GI Innovation Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, please subscribe and drop us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also send us questions and ideas for future episodes to brainsandguts@gi.org. We look forward to talking to you soon.